Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 176 with the title, The Courage to be Seen. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Ace Kipton. Ace is a somatic sexologist on a mission to help others explore their identity and authenticity through deep healing and embodied self-expression. When I asked Ace to describe his superpower, he said, it is being able to hold a compassionate space for others, exist fully and truthfully. Hello, Ace. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. It's nice to be on the show with you today.
So whereabouts are you in the world? From that accent, I'm guessing you're not in the UK?
No, I'm originally from the Midwest of the United States, but I live in Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Wow. That's near the Grand Canyon, is it?
Always away, but we got the Rocky Mountains here. And so I'm an avid jeeper, so I enjoy being outdoors, doing a lot of trail rides. So this is the perfect place for me.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That's loads of fun. Wow. Never been to Colorado. It's on the list. But yeah.
Well, I got a place for you to stay if you come. So let me know.
Well, there we are. We've got a date. Yeah. Give us sometime when it's possible. Yeah. Let's see what we can do.
That's
so,
great.
Ace, a somatic sexologist. I mean, I'm just intrigued. I mean, hopefully if you're listening to this, you're intrigued as well. And you've had an interesting life journey. Discovering yourself, and I guess you're using some of that as a lever to others. So do you want to give us a bit of your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2022, my life fell apart. I lost everything. I lost my job, my family, my career. Like, I had a 20-year career as a professional theologian, and I was let go due to a reorganization, and it was completely out of the blue. And I was just building a custom lake house. And so I went, oh no, like I no longer have an income to afford the place that I live in. And basically what happened was my life was thrown into chaos. And from that, I started questioning and critically thinking about how I lived my life for the first 38 years. And I realized that I wasn't being authentic to who I am. I was doing what everybody else in this world wanted me to do. And I think a lot of us do that. You know, we go to school, we get a job because maybe our parents said, hey, this is the path you should take. But it's not necessarily the path that you wanted to take or I wanted to take in life. And so in losing everything, I started to critically think about how I got there and what I actually wanted to do with my life. And so as I was sitting on my therapist's couch, it became really clear to me that I was trans. And I had lived a life as a female. I was an executive leader, and that was all gone. And so I was like, how do I want to rebuild my life in such a way that I'm actually happy and enjoying the lifestyle that I have? And so I ended up watching a show called Sex, Love, and Goop. It's on Netflix. It's free. It's a really fun show that you can binge watch over a weekend. But basically what happens is there's somatic sexologists that are taking clients into a room. And as the storyline unfolds, you can see their lifestyle start to change. And they're actually living a life of pleasure versus a life of pain. And so as I was watching the show, I was like, I need that in my life because I understand pain really well. I've been living a lifestyle of pain my entire life, but I would love to transform it into pleasure. And so I hired a somatic sexologist. I went and had my own sex love and goop experience. And my life was completely transformed because I was awakened to the sensations in my body and who I really am. And so from that, I decided, you know what, I need to provide this experience for other people. And so I got trained in somatic sexology, got a bunch of certifications, and now that's what I'm doing. I'm helping other people land in their bodies and have an erotically liberated lifestyle.
I've got a load of questions in my head from that. First of all, there's two words, somatic and sexologist. Could you just maybe break each of those two words down and just give me a reference point for what a sexologist is and what a somatic version of a sexologist is?
Yeah. So a sexologist is somebody that studies sex, right? It's like a theologist would study God or religion. So I study sex. So a lot of it is gender, identity, expression, and orientation, and helping people critically think about their life and their lifestyle and what they really want out of it and then how to get that. And then the somatic piece of it is actually just landing in your body and being true to what's there and recognizing and realizing the sensations and the feelings that are going on and really embodying who you want to be and living that out.
So it's that alignment of self with spiritually, physically, mentally, everything kind of aligned so that you're, to use an overused expression, true to yourself is what you're trying to say here. Does that reflect that often the hardest person to come out to, whatever that may mean to you, is yourself, admitting to yourself who you are, or what's important to you? Because we all tend to live by other people's rules, don't we? We leave as we grow up, we have expectations set on us by our parents, our community, our relatives, and then we just end up on this conveyor belt. And sometimes we've got to realize that who are we?
Exactly. We all are playing a character in this world. We all have this persona that we've created of who we are, and that becomes our identity. But is that really your identity and who you really are? Are you allowing all of yourself to exist, or are you only allowing a certain portion of yourself to exist because that's okay in society and it's acceptable, right? And so what I do in my work with people is I allow all of them to exist. The good, the bad, the ugly, what they think is right or wrong, like all of it's welcomed in this space because it's all of you. And I think what a lot of us do is we really repress those desires because it's not seen as something that's actually, you know, okay to have in this world. And that's where a lot of the like incongruency and, you know, the lack of alignment happens. And that's why we're so sad and frustrated because we're not living a life that's true to who we are and expressing that in this world today.
Yeah, that's the, you must be a good girl, you must be a strong boy, repress your emotions, be emotional, want a family, not want a family, can't be gay, must be straight, can't be trans, must be cis, living up to those societal constructs. And often we have our own communities that enforce that and police us into those boxes, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that, was it 2022? Your world turned upside down. Was that the first inkling you had around your own incongruence of identity? Or had it been plaguing you?
Absolutely not. It's been plaguing me my whole life. I mean, I knew at the age of 4, and I think my parents knew it too, right? Of like, I was way more into boy things. I wanted to be muddy, be really active, do sports. I didn't want to wear makeup, do my hair, dresses, right? Like, it was my entire life that I was fighting the societal norm. And I knew that I was gender incongruent. There was no gender conformity, right? I knew that, but I was struggling with it. And I felt like I had to align with who society said I needed to be versus who I actually was.
And you said before you were in your adult career, you were a theologist. Is that about theology? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so, I was a professional theologian,
Theologian, was that associated with a faith or religion, or was that just spiritually connected? Or
I was a youth pastor and a missionary within the Christian church. And so I grew up in like the evangelical Protestant denominations.
And that presumably that the doctrine would have not accepted deviation from the typical, from the norm, from the straight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they believe in, there's two genders, male and female, right? And so obviously, if you look at science and the facts, there's a binary, right? There's a spectrum of we could be masculine, we could be feminine, we could be somewhere in the middle, right? And there could be fluidity in that. And that's not necessarily the way that I was brought up. And so that was a really hard thing. I think back in 2022, when I started to actually look at the science versus what I had been taught to believe, you know, I believe that to be true, but the science is we're all born female. And then, you know, 6 to 7 weeks later, our bodies start to change, our brains start to develop. And that's when, you know, we become male or female in society's terms, right?
Yeah. So all growing up throughout your life, you adopted this spiritual identity aligned, as you say, with Protestant Christianity, living in a world where whoever you were didn't meet the rules that you were being told, and you were conforming to those, almost like conversion therapy in yourself, aren't you? You're converting, keeping yourself repressed.
Absolutely.
If you look back now to those times, did you feel incongruent? Did you feel that you were living that lie looking back? And how do you rationalize that time in your mind? Because you must have had deep faith in
absolutely
an investment in that religion.
Yeah, there was always a tension within me, right? Of what I was told was true and what I felt was true inside of me. And I think what happened was, when my world fell apart, I started to realize that the rules that I was living by, they're just all made up. Somebody said, this is how you should be. This is who you should be. This is how you should act. This is what you should do with your life. And it's like, who made that up? It doesn't align with what I know to be true for myself. And so in critical thinking, I was able to go, okay, I was told that my purpose was this. I was told that I was supposed to live my life like this, but it goes against everything that I feel inside. So what would happen if I would just allow whatever's arising to naturally arise and live from that space? And so I learned how to live a more fluid lifestyle of understanding, this is what's naturally arising in me, and this is what I would like to express. And so I just started testing that out. And at first it wasn't really very fun, because my family was like, hold on, the person that we knew is now challenging everything that they believed. And so they thought I was a sinner. And so, I mean, we can go down that road, but that was a really interesting time in my life where I ended up losing everything because I had to step away from the indoctrination that I'd had my entire life to actually find out who I am and what my purpose actually is here in this world.
I'm going to say sad reality. There's a lot of joy in the reality as well. So it's not all sad, but the hard truth is that often trans non-binary people have to make a polarizing choice around who they are. And often that means leaving behind parts of their life that they valued immensely, but it was no longer compatible. That's what you're saying there, is you've had to, in order to go forward with your life, you've had to let go of a lot.
It's incredibly painful. I love my family. I love the community that I used to have. Like, there's a deep relationship there. But I was unable to find compassion and empathy for who I really am. And at some point, I needed to walk away. And I think it's almost out of love for them that I left. Because in reality, I mean, I was very well known nationally as an expert. professional Christian theologian, right? And had I not left the community that I was in, it really would have imploded my entire family and community's just lifestyle. Everything for my mom would have changed. And I didn't want to do that to her. So I literally packed up everything and left because I love my family and because I didn't want them to go through all the heartache of everyone else finding out about it and then us being the talk of town. Lifestyle changing.
So moving on, you made that decision. Well, in fact, you didn't make the decision. The decision was necessary. It became something you had to do. So, yeah, I often say to people that, you know, I didn't make a decision. The decision made me, sort of thing. It was kind of a necessary, not a choice, but an evolution that had to occur.
Yeah, the universe made a decision for me.
Yeah, you went through some dark times. You broke a lot of chains. A lot of relationships and cause a lot of pain to yourself and a lot of pain to others, I assume. So what joy have you found since? as this awakening allows you to explore?
Yeah. So I learned how to transmute the pain into pleasure. The first 38 years of my life were incredibly painful because I wasn't able to be who I authentically am. And as I started awakening that in myself and in my mind and in my body, things started to slowly shift from pain into pleasure. And so actually, Jaya's work in the Erotic Blueprints is a huge piece of being able to find pleasure in my body and in who I am and how I go about this world. And her methodology or her framework, although it's meant for a fulfilling sex life, it actually can be used in your entire lifestyle. And so I've taken her framework and I've transformed my life so that I'm living out of that space.
I'm going to make an assumption that you've converted your body from estrogen-based to testosterone-based. Just purely based on your visual appearance and your voice. So you obviously have a testosterone dominant endocrine system now.
I do.
What were the key things you noticed maybe in terms of your sexology of yourself and your outlook on life that changed with that flip, if you like, from the estrogen?
Yeah, I naturally have this masculine presence. And it was so repressed my entire life because I was trying to be feminine. And so when I transitioned, there was just such an alignment with the way that I come to this world and how I interact with other people. And so testosterone has been amazing for my body. I feel so good. I used to wake up in the morning, you know, before I transitioned, I was sluggish. I didn't really want to get dressed. I didn't want to see myself in the mirror, right? And now I wake up and I'm like, all right, let's get the day going. And I look at myself in the mirror and I'm really excited about what I see because it actually reflects how I feel inside. Yeah, it's been such a fun journey.
Yeah, I can relate to that completely from the 180, the other perspective. You know, it's turning off the testosterone, turning on the estrogen for me has been incredibly affirming. As you say, you look in the mirror, and you see yourself, the shape and everything else you see in the mirror is you. And it is wonderfully affirming. And also the way the brain responds to stimulus, emotions, the world around you, it just feels more comfortable now. And it sounds like that's the same for you, where the testosterone is amplifying your inbuilt personality. Whereas before I felt like I was out of control. It was like this masculine figure in my head was driving me down the path. I was going, hang on a minute, going the wrong way. No. And have you ever seen the Disney Pixar Inside Out with the characters in
the
head?
Yes.
I often describe the fact that I was being driven by the little red angry person all the time. And then one day they kidnapped the little red angry person, strapped it to a chair, and then joy took over. The feminine started running my brain. And then it all started working as it should have done. So maybe you probably got the opposite. The joy is still there, but joy's got a deeper voice now.
That's so true. Yeah, my mood drastically shifted. You know, 3 months into starting tea, it was like, wow, this is what I've always wanted. Like, I had this longing desire to feel this way in my body. And now with these hormones in my body that have shifted, it feels like there's an alignment.
So you're now working with individuals, couples, thruples, and every permutation of people who want to develop their own understanding of their own bodies and the pleasure zones, I guess. What surprises you about people when they come to you? Is there a common theme or is everybody different?
I mean, I think all of us at some point in time have learned to abandon a piece of ourselves. And that's a self-protection mechanism. And so what I've noticed in my work with clients is they may not even realize that they've abandoned a piece of themselves and that's what wants to be expressed. And so I really enjoy like the journey of getting curious with clients and trying to find how can we gather some more information about who you want to be, what your desires are, what do you really want? And then that's actually when the transformation starts with a lot of my clients. They come to me because they have a problem and they don't know how to fix it. And I don't necessarily give them the answer, but I give them the safe space to explore what might be arising and then how to get what you want out of that. So that's what I've noticed is like a commonality with almost all my clients is there's something that's repressed and they've learned how to find it in other ways, but it's not necessarily meeting that direct need. And if I can give them the tools and resources to actually go out and figure out what that is and then get what they want, that's when their lifestyle starts to change and they actually enjoy the life.
I noticed on your website when I was looking earlier that you've kind of coined the phrase erotic blueprint.
Yes.
Can you dive into a bit of that and how that maps out for people?
Yeah. So the erotic blueprints was actually created by Jaya. She's one of the top, I don't know, 5 or 6 sexologists in the world. She lives here in Boulder, Colorado, and she created a framework that basically helps people understand how they're naturally wired. So what happens in our society is we're taught this is who you should be. This is how you should express yourself. This is what sex is. But that's only like a fifth of what's actually possible out there. And so in her framework, she has 5 different types. She has the energetic, sensual, sexual, kinky, and shapeshifter. A lot of us learn how to be in the sexual and do our life from the sexual space. But we don't understand that there's 4 other places that we could be living our life out of and actually be wired in and actually enjoy. So what I do is I take her framework, and there's a quiz out there that the listeners can take, or my clients, I have them take as well, that kind of gives us an idea of what their blueprint type might be. And then I teach them about what does it actually look like to live your life out of what your primary type is, not what the world says, but what are you primarily, how are you primarily wired, and how can you get the most fulfillment and enjoyment out of
yourself? We're kind of wired by society to embrace, if you like, the sex side, aren't we? But the kink side, if you're not in the right environment with the safe people, and we may fantasize about it, but it's always that taboo, isn't it? I met someone recently, a couple of years ago, and she was a professional lawyer, a top-tier lawyer by trade, by profession. Yet she also ran this alternate Instagram where she was basically kinky, and she used to wear kinky underwear, bondage gear, not to do anything with it, but as a form of expression about her inner self. So she was not selling that. She was just being that as an empowered, strong woman. She wants to take control of that side of her kink side. And I think that's what you're saying there is they can be separate parts of our identity. We could be kinky without having to enact it, but feel it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's a deep shame in kink, in doing something that's taboo, right? We're taught that that's not okay. We can't express that. We can't do that. It's not right, whatever. But if you start to embrace that, there's a depth of exploration that can happen. And actually, you can expand who you are in this world.
To some extent, we see a lot more out and open kink within the LGBTQIA+ communities, because many of us in these communities have always had to break out of shame. Once you've broken out of shame, nothing becomes shameful anymore. You actually, who cares? You know, you've lost that give a fuck almost, haven't you? You kind of, which is probably why you see more free expression in the queer community. But for other people who are perfectly heterosexual, cisgender, they've never had to cross that shame barrier, have they?
Yeah, they haven't challenged it. Yeah,
I don't know if you find this, but just the fact we're having this conversation today is I've got so used to over the last 10 years talking about every inner deep dark secret I've ever had. I've lost that red line where I won't cross these days. And it's like people could talk about anything. And I start off the conversation thinking, I won't say that. I won't say that. I won't say that. And suddenly before long, we're just talking about it. And and I'm almost watching the other person going, too much information. And they're almost backtracking, go, Joanne's a bit too open to share anything. Because I don't have the same inhibitions I had 10 years ago. It's just because you become desensitized to those societal barriers in your life. And I'm assuming that that's what you're helping people do, is break down that societal barrier and say, it's okay. There's no shame in this room. We can go here.
Yeah. It's about creating a space of safety. right? I think a lot of us walk in this world with our fists up. We're like ready for a fight or ready to defend. But if we can actually create spaces where we're allowed to have conversation, we're allowed to bring up some of the deeper, darker places in our lives, and we actually have the ability to be safe with someone, that's what our nervous system is really desiring. We're not meant to be in consistent turmoil and protection mode and knowing everything that's going on in this world. That's just not how our bodies are designed.
No, I think you're right. It is prehistorically, we're built into fight, flight, freeze mechanisms. We're built into all these protection mechanisms. But the modern world doesn't have the same threats, or has different threats. They're maybe not physical threats. They're not going to be eaten by something threats or poisoned or starved. We have a comfort blanket around us. But we've also realized that society gives us privilege by conforming to it and the rules of engagement. And as you and I both know, when you step outside of those constructs, the rules close in around you to try and police you back into your box again. So again, coming out with a kink, coming out, talking about your sexuality or gender identity, all of these things, but crossing that line still. And I think that's what we've got to try and help people get over.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's about finding your sense of power, agency, and sovereignty, right? If we never find that as humanity, our governments and our world can do whatever they want with us and make us their little toys and move us around like chess pieces, right? But if we actually can ground in who we are, they've lost their power.
Before we press record, I was telling a story about a person I met in my past, post-transition, and she wanted some advice, for want of a better way of describing it, or guidance on how she could better engage with her partner. And she was wanting to be more gregarious, more outgoing in the bedroom. And she didn't know what would be a turn on, because what's going on in her mind, her fantasy, her story in her head is different to a male fantasy in his head. And there's, how do we get people to actually communicate what I want, what you want, and how we can find that connection? That's got to be a real tough thing, to get people to be honest with each other.
I think, man, this is so multi-layered. Like, this is incredibly complex, in my opinion. But if we can allow all of someone else to exist without judgment or shame, and give them the space to express what that is, a step in the right direction. I think like a lot of times what happens with couples is I don't share something with someone else because it affects their life. But if I can actually own my own experience and they can own their own experience, and we can find our own eros and allow that to naturally come out of us and expect and understand that that person has ownership over their own life and their own experience, and not necessarily combine that and say that that's my thing to bear. That's a starting point in actually being able to share our wants, needs, and desires. And I think the best way to explain this is I have a friend that I can share anything and everything that's going on, but it's because I own that. Right? It has nothing to do with their life and their what they have going on. And so there's no judgment of like, I did this because of you. It's I did this for me, or I did this to help you. Now, this is not landing right. We'll have to cut some of this, I think.
No, I can see where you're going with this. I think what you end up doing is you build this story in your head, don't you, sometimes? And that's what's going on. You're building this story. You're creating this rule book of who
exactly
you are, how societal thinks you should be, and you're also making stuff up about the other person and creating a rule for them in your head.
It's exactly.
Trying to peel that back, isn't it? That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for landing where I was going from that.
And sorry for latching onto the word kink, because why not? You know, it's an area that I'm keen to find out more about. That one person's kink is another person's vanilla. You know, it's for many people, sex is two people in bed with the lights off, doing what they need to do, and then rolling over, going to sleep. And that's normal life for them. Other people grabbing each other on the kitchen table or the stairs or in the back of the car or on a park bench or going out for a walk in the woods, that's kind of their normal. And kink doesn't have to be painful or bondage or dressing up, or it just has to be different to traditional, whatever that may mean to you. You have to stretch that boundary slightly for it to be, ooh, that's intriguing. I wonder if you'll like that. And you go on this journey together, don't you, to try and explore what works and what doesn't work. It's overcoming that fear of embarrassment is the hard bit. Telling you what I fancy doing.
Yeah, it's definitely a stretch for some people. So here's the interesting piece that I've learned with kink. If you can allow yourself to have some curiosity and naturally follow your desires, you never know what's going to happen. Well, you're almost always going to have a good time. And you're going to gather more information about how to make the next experience that you have even more fun.
So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to get the brain chemicals firing, aren't we? We're trying to give those pleasure zones. From what I understand, we become kind of acclimatized to the chemicals we have, and we have to keep finding that next hit, which is a bigger high or a bigger something.
Yep.
We have to keep finding that stimulation, which is, I guess, why after 10 years of marriage, 20 years of marriage, you need something really drastic to float your boat again.
Interesting. Well, so that's
maybe I've just outed my own, limiting beliefs there, but you know, is that what we need to do? Just keep pushing those boundaries to keep getting that next dopamine.
I mean, that's what a lot of people do. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, right? Because I think what happens is we're always trying to find that edge, or we keep pushing that edge instead of actually just being present in the moment with what our desires are right here, right now. And so a lot of times what people are doing is they're bypassing what they actually feel, the actual sensations that are coming up, because they just need to get that next hit, the next exciting experience, that next, you know, adventure, whatever that might be. It's the adrenaline rush that people are looking for. And that's actually an escape mechanism.
There's another word I noticed in your bio and show notes and on your website. Is it bondissage? What's bondissage?
Yeah, bondissage. So that's created by Jaylene. And it's basically a way in which to do a kinky massage. And what that does is it explores power dynamics. It explores sensations in your body. It also explores, you know, anticipation, tease, which for an energetic can be really, really great at dropping you into your body, because an energetic person is someone that enjoys anticipation, ease, chemistry. So through bondissage, actually, we work through all five blueprints and we give people an experience on a massage table where they're tied down and they are getting sensations that are allowing them to be in their body and experience more pleasure.
So these are physical sensations. We're not talking about tantric here. We're talking about physical, not mental sensations.
Yes, exactly. So it's a lot of touch, obviously, with massage with your hands. We use tools as well. You know, we have things like floggers and, you know, different types of materials that we bring over bodies. We do anal massage. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we could actually do a bondissage session depending on somebody's desires, right? But one of the fun things to do in bondissage is if somebody has kinky desires and they've never, you know, done anal play, we have something called an anal hook that we use in the session. So it allows people to explore things that maybe they haven't explored before in a really safe environment where there's trained providers. And obviously we don't do anything that the client doesn't want, but we allow them to have experiences that they may not have had with a lover that they've always wanted, but they've never really asked for. That's the time and place to get it.
Guessing that the first time is the hardest coming to you. The second, third, fourth, and hundredth time they come to you, it's an adventure they're looking forward to. So it's trying to break that barrier down the first one or two times, I guess.
Yeah, usually the first time someone comes to me, it's nervous system development, getting used to each other, getting, you know, comfortable with each other in the same space, And then the second session is usually where we really get into some fun things where they express a desire that they've always had, but they've never been able to meet it. And then what kind of container can we create so that they can explore those inner longings that they've always had and get some other needs met? So yes, usually people come to me for at least 3 sessions, but I mean, I have people that come to me for hundreds.
It sounds very interesting. Shame we're not in Colorado. Yeah, love to come and have a session and find out more.
There's providers all over the United States and the world. So you might be able to find a provider near you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good to go at the moment. Let me just take a brain check on that one. Yeah. I'm not feeling the need right now. But no, I can certainly, I'm open to the concept completely. And given the right time, the right context and the right situation, yeah, I would certainly go. Let's give it a go. Let's find out more.
Is it mainly singles
or is it couples or?
It's everything. Yeah. We get singles, we get couples, we get, you know, multiple people. It just depends on, you know, what your arrangements are. If you're poly, you know, we're open to serving anyone.
What's the, you mentioned trust. You used that word or implied that word many times. I'm guessing that stepping across your doorstep is the first trust. And then sharing personal information is another level of trust. And it must get easier once you start sharing. We talked about this earlier. Once you get onto this conveyor belt of sharing, it becomes more comfortable. And that's probably the first session is really breaking that down and establishing that bond.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll do a virtual session first just so that we can pick up each other's vibes. I mean, I want to make sure that I'm comfortable with you, you're comfortable with me, we can share some, you know, what the container is going to look like. And then usually when they come into person, obviously that's just establishing in-person trust. And yeah, it's a huge part of my job.
Is there a reluctance from male identifying people about relinquishing their power? Or is that often their fantasy is to be able to go from a dominant to a dominated stance? Is that me stereotyping here? Or is that a common attribute?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people grow up thinking that men have to be dominant, and men have to take charge, and men have to be the top, or, you know, whatever. But not everybody's wired that way. Or they might be wired that way, but they might want an outlet for some of the other desires that they have. And so in my space, I mean, I really just create an atmosphere where if they would like to be domed, if they would like to be topped, right? And so a lot of times, the people that come see me are, you know, people that are in the boardrooms, presidents of organizations, people that are always having to be in charge and take the lead. They're just like, I just want to receive. And I don't want to have to give you anything, no expectations of me doing anything for you, right? And so it just allows them to land in their bodies and experience whatever it is that they might be wanting to experience in that.
I certainly look at my own transition and the way my body's changed and other things. There's been a journey of exploration for me to try and reorientate my identity, not only my gender, but also my romantic attraction, my physical attraction within the bounds of a very strong and happy marriage, and trying to understand how that's changed. And also how Marie, my wife, has also had to adapt and explore herself as well. And I think one of the reasons we've been able to enjoy and carry on our marriage as soulmates and life partners and wives, is that we've both been open to trying to figure that out. And that's, as you're saying from your experience, that's not an easy ask for anybody to reorientate their sexual desires and label. So
it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it takes a very open-minded person. It's what you're trying to encourage people to do this, yeah, to actually step out of where they were into where they could be.
Yeah, and not only open-minded, but somebody who's willing and desiring to stay in the fire with them. I think a lot of times we think that we've lost love for someone and we've lost that spark. And I mean, maybe that's true, but maybe they've just lost the desire to actually stay in the fire and go through it. And there's a lot of reasons why that might be on their own personal level. But if someone's actually willing to go there, and experience a relationship like what you have with your partner, right? Like the depth of intimacy that you wouldn't have had that probably had you not gone through what you've gone through in the last 10
years. But we often say to each other that our relationship is stronger today than potentially it was or would have been otherwise. Because as you can probably imagine, we've done a lot of talking over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Done a lot of shouting and screaming and hugging and crying and being with each other. Far more than probably we would have ever communicated had things remained as they were in the past. So I think it's an immense privilege that the fact we've evolved our relationship, not just physical relationship, but also our romantic relationship and day-to-day relationship in ways we could never have explored. Well, without an independent counselor, maybe, but we've done that largely by eroding those barriers, because suddenly there's no red lines anymore. We've crossed all the red lines that there are. We've told the truth ultimately behind who we are now. And so there's very little secrets in our life, and we know each other better now than we've ever done.
And it takes work, it takes determination, it's choice, it's intention, and it's learning how to love someone else, like the way that we want to be loved.
And I think as humans, as we go through our lives, our needs evolve, don't they? And I'm sure you find this where when I'm in my teens, I'm exploring, trying to figure stuff out, trying to practice. I don't want to be, this is maybe not the one for me forever, but it's a bit of fun. Then you get to that sort of biological clock type time in your 20s and whatever it may be in your 30s, thinking, well, actually, the purpose of this is to have a family. And then you go through that tired phase where you've got your family, your hormones change again, and you're saying, right, okay, no more. You've got to work protecting your offspring now. And then your offspring leave, and you're going, well, okay, now what? I don't want any more kids. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, menopause, whatever it may be, stress at work. So we've got to rediscover ourselves in our 40s to find new purpose in our relationship, haven't we? And try and do that within our relationships, rather than looking outside to find spice elsewhere. And that's what often happens. We reject looking in and start looking out again.
Yeah, I mean, we're all going through different phases in our life, and we're all making different choices according to what we want and desire. So, I mean, a lot of us live our life the way that you just mentioned. We go through it almost the way that society tells us to, right? You grow up, you get married, you have kids, you retire. That's like the typical society. And the interesting piece that I realized is like, how many people are actually happy with that life? A lot of people who come to me, they're like, I wish I wouldn't have gotten married when I was 21 or had kids when I was 25. Or, you know, they have all these regrets. And it's really interesting to me, like, what would happen in our society if we started asking questions and critically thinking about, what do you really want in your life at a younger age? I think we'd have a lot less miserable people, a lot less divorce rates, a lot less hate and, you know, people getting hurt. If we could just be authentic and true to how we're naturally wired and what we really do truly want in this life. If I would have been able to transition at the age of 18, there's 20 years of pain and heartache that I might not have had to go through. Now, was it good for me to go through that? Yes. I grew, I evolved, and I changed. But there's always this question of, what if society was different? And we just allow people to own their experiences, and whatever is right and true for them. I think there'd be a lot less pain in this world.
Yeah, I agree. But the trouble is, we're so ingrained in this process of pain, and dependence, and rules, constructs, that it's almost impossible to break out of it. Without using a matrix analogy here, we do have to take the pill, find the truth, and pull the plug out. And otherwise, we'll never escape. And society is just not geared up for it. Society wants us in debt. It wants to be controlled by the state. We have to have rules. Drive on this side of the road. Don't drive too fast. Eat this. Don't eat that. Spend this. Behave like this. Because as a society, that's what keeps us coherent. And And when we try and bend those rules, we're seen as outliers. You know, we talked about this right at the beginning, that it's almost impossible to swim with the stream when you're the wrong fish.
Yeah, I mean, what this does is it encapsulates our human experience, right? I think as a human, we're meant to go through all these different things and evolve and shape shift and change with what's going on and learn and grow and develop, right? I think that's just a part of who we are as humans and life in this world today.
So I give you a ring, I say, Ace, I need your help. What's the first question you ask me then? You know, I'm not feeling it anymore. I love my partner. We want to be good together. I want back what we had 30 years ago, and it's difficult.
So a lot of times what I do is I start with, what do you want? What is the end goal? Do you have an idea of what that is? A lot of times we don't even know what that might be. And so what I do is I help my clients get curious with that. So let's find out what your end desires are, and then I give you a pathway.
So it's allowing people to draw back the curtain, see the road ahead of them, and take that first step. And then they realize the first step isn't as scary as you thought it was going to be.
It will change your life, absolutely. But it's exactly what you need to do.
So it's changed your life, as you said. You were at this crossroads. Staying on the same road was not an option for various reasons. You got jolted by a circumstance which caused you to question yourself. How could you recognize that point in your life without having to have trauma to jolt you into it? Because I'm not saying I had trauma to jolt me, but there were things that happened around that time that made creating change much easier because some of it was going anyway. So I didn't have to hang on to everything. I just hang on to the bits. So it'd be far easier for people to realize they can make change without having to lose things.
Yeah, some people are probably not nearly as stubborn as that. Learning from other people's experiences and just realizing it. I mean, I realized it so much sooner. I could see that something was going to happen. And ultimately, the destruction of my life was a gift from the universe to allow pieces of me that needed to die. It was almost like a death of the ego, right? Going into the dark side of the soul. And not everybody needs to go there, but I think at some point in our lives, we all probably do go there.
The metaphor and the analogy I use is it's almost like being on the space shuttle. When you're on the stand, you're pointed up in the air, you have to push the button and blast off with enough velocity that you escape Earth's gravitational pull. Because if you do it half-hearted, you don't push the button deep enough, you don't grab it enough with it, you just get halfway up and then you drop back down to Earth. So you've got to try and find this escape velocity where you actually break free of the chains that are holding you back. And then when you're up there in space, you're looking around going, wow, this is kind of scary. How do I get back down again? And what you've got to try and figure out is how to get up there without losing all those heat-protective tiles. Because if you've lost all those heat tiles coming up in your journey, you break all those things. And coming back down is going to burn up on re-entry. If you go too shallow, you'll bounce off in space. If you go too steep, you'll burn up. And it's trying to find that exact path where you can land back on the tarmac and put the parachutes out the back and go, yay, I'm here. I'm still in one piece. Yeah. That's a really tough navigation to get all those little courses and velocities and impact correct.
It's so hard. And what I learned through my journey is it's almost impossible to do it by yourself. Like, had I not had a team of people that could resource me and come inside of me and like give me the tools that I needed to actually launch off and do this in a way that wasn't going to destroy me. Yeah. It's finding your team of people, finding your support system, your community. We all long to belong. We all want to be worthy, right? And so through the process for me, it was learning that of how to not only, you know, have myself and be independent and do all the things, but how do I allow other people to come around me, support me, and help me?
Yeah. I'm fascinated. Your name, Ace Kipton. And one of the privileges we have for being trans, I guess, is we get to pick our own name. And how did you pick your name? You made it up. So how did you make it up?
Yeah. Yeah. So I always wanted to have kids. Well, that's not true. I thought if I had a kid, I would name my kid Kipton. I love the name Kipton. There's something about it that just was drawn to me. And as I was going through this transition process, I hired a therapist and we were doing some inner child work. And I was working with my inner kid. And I named my inner kid Kipton. And it became really important to me. And so that's how I came up with my last name, was instead of having a kid and naming my kid, it was my inner child.
That's beautiful, beautiful. It's also unique, I guess. There aren't many other Ace Kiptons in the world. So it makes you easily locatable on search engines and other places, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. I don't think there's anybody that spells their first name like I do. And then I don't know if anybody that has a last name that I have as well. So very unique.
Ace, A-Y-C-E, Kipton, K-Y-P-T-Y-N. Yeah, very unique. Very striking. Ace, it's been absolutely fantastic. How can people get hold of you if they want to find out more and maybe even do a virtual session with you?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I'm on most of the social media platforms. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. You can find me at Ace Kipton. Or you can take a look at my website, acekipton.com.
And I've got a copy of it here, and it looks fantastic. And you can talk about voluntary life? How do you pronounce that?
Volitionary life. We all have a
volitionary. That's it. Volitionary life. That's it. God, I couldn't find the pronunciation on that. Absolutely fantastic, Ace. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I deeply appreciate it.
That was great. I loved that.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.